Today on Cube FM, we're diving into the critical roles and responsibilities of cloud native engineers in threat intelligence and offensive research. To do so, I spoke to Yakir and Asaf from Aqua Security, and we explored the significance of staying current with industry changes, the vital importance of Kubernetes secrets in preventing supply chain attack threats. Our discussion highlights the severe impact of leaked credentials, emphasizing the need for security awareness and the use of scanning tools to prevent data leaks and also those pesky misconfigurations that can cause a lot of problems. We'll also touch on the importance of encrypting secrets, developing a mature threat model, and the impact that crypto mining attacks are still having on Kubernetes clusters. Check out this episode as we share insights on making security more accessible to developers and all stakeholders across cloud-native organizations to enhance cybersecurity for all. Now, supply chain security requires visibility into the core of the systems. Naturally, eBPF comes to mind. And eBPF-based runtime security equals Tetragon. Tetragon can look deep into the system, connecting network data to the actual binary that caused it for deep workload visibility. It also analyzes real-time TCP UDP metrics, understands enforcement mechanisms inside the kernel, and overall ensures compliance across the clusters when needed. NIST? Anyone? Follow the link in the description to discover how Tetragon by Isovalent elevates Kubernetes security. Now, let's take a look at the episode. To get started, we want to know about which three emerging Kubernetes tools are you keeping an eye on? Yakir, we'll start out with you.
I think that OPA Gatekeeper, Kuverno, and KubeWarden. I am a huge fan of define your own policy and secure your Kubernetes cluster by defining different rules about your specific needs. There are great rules that already exist in this project. And we actually now research different rules in this area and try to improve them because we found some misalignment or a problem with some of them. And we would like to suggest in the future some way to secure them and secure your Kubernetes cluster with better rules.
Do you agree? Any other tools that you'd like to look at?
So I completely agree with Yakir. I would like to add one more tool, which is Tracy. Tracy is developed by Aqua, so it's a little bit, I have my own my own interest here. But to be honest, when we work with Kubernetes, we really have a mindset of defending the Kubernetes clusters. And Tracy really helps us by monitoring the in the eBPF level of the Linux servers, all the syscalls, all the network. So it's a really good tool from security perspective.
Very good. Since you did mention Aqua Security, I think it ties well into our next question. We know that you work at Aqua Security. What do you do? What's your job involved?
Okay, so I lead the threat intelligence operation, which is basically, we are a security company. So we need to be aware of all the attacks, everything that is out there, what the attackers are doing, how they are circumventing Kubernetes clusters, Linux servers. So this is what we do. We basically look at the software development lifecycle and understand that. And my role is to basically to do a party, basically to invite everyone to attack our honeypots and to learn from that.
Okay, very good. And Yakir, what about you?
I am more in the red side, and I mean by that I'm trying to research more offensive technique on cloud native technology, on the cloud, on CI/CD, supply chain, and different area. Try to think about new attack vector and what attacker might do and report our finding to some vendors before attacker could exploit this. And sometimes to actually introduce them or present our finding in security conferences or think about solution, sometimes in our product and sometimes give solution for the open source community or just to increase awareness among developers and DevOps around different risks.
And speaking of the open source community, how did you get into cloud native? What did you do before that and what started the change?
I was a penetration tester and a red teamer that mostly work at on-prem network and actually in different technology. I have experience in mobile and VoIP and different technology. And after some times, I feel that I want to move on from something that is more popular and increase that it's actually cloud native technology. And then I decided that I want to understand this technology more. And in my opinion, there aren't so many researchers around this area. So I want to be one of those that try to find the new risk before others would do it.
Good. What about your case, Asaf? What about you? How did you get started in cloud native? Yeah.
So it's very similar to Yakir. I started in security, e-fraud, commercial fraud, and then I went to threat intelligence. I led a group of threat intelligence analysts. And then I thought it would be very interesting to go deeper into technology, and cloud native is the best option. So I joined Aqua Security, and since then I've been working with the cloud native environments, understanding threat intelligence landscape in these areas.
And now it's no secret that this is an industry that moves very, very quickly. What have been the best ways for you to stay up to date with all the different changes that are happening? What are your favorite resources, whether they're blogs, videos, tutorials? What do you follow?
I follow some subreddits about security. There is a great subreddit called NetSec, the Kubernetes subreddit, and sometimes some article, or after conferences like KubeCon, I like to read a briefing of other reviewers, and sometimes watch some of the sessions that others have recommended about them.
Anything to add, Asaf?
Yeah, so to be honest, documentation, a lot of documentation, Kubernetes.io and such, courses, online courses. There are some good courses with excellent labs. And I guess that's the best way to get updated.
I think that maybe from the Honeypot we get many insight about different attacks.
Yeah, that's the offensive side. Yeah.
And regarding that, yeah, with the Honeypot, for people that might not be aware of that, you know, how does that, you know, the incentives for people to want to go and try something out, like let's say someone's never done this, what are common questions that you get about that for people that may be curious about it but aren't sure where to start?
So first of all, you need to read a lot because it's very easy to mistake. And if you don't know what you are doing, basically you create a software development lifecycle environments like CI/CD, like applications, like Docker API. And then you expose it to the internet with a vulnerability or misconfiguration. So if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know how to segregate, how to prevent lateral movement to the cloud, you can end up with hundreds of thousands of dollars missing from your bank account because attackers created, created like a crypto mining operation. Yeah, exactly. So this is something that you really need to know what you're doing. There are some good Docker in Docker options, some good environments to start with, but don't get into it unless you really understand what you're doing. Once you understand how to strengthen or to just build strong environments so they won't get lateral movement, then it's really nice to see some specific applications or some specific honeypots. You can look for VolHub. There are some good misconfigured and vulnerable applications there. And basically, once you upload them, you need monitoring tool. That's why I mentioned the Tracy, because you can monitor with the eBPF-based technology, the syscalls and the network, and then you can understand what the attackers are doing. You can monitor the network to understand what kind of areas they are targeting in the Kubernetes level. But I wouldn't recommend to start with Kubernetes. Start small with Docker in Docker, which is good, which is a very good start.
You know, regarding your journey as, you know, cloud native engineers, particularly in the security space, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of career advice, what would it be? Yakir?
I think start reading and watching materials, anything as soon as possible. Even if you don't understand all the things or all the details right now, each piece of this information could serve you in the future. And in this way, you build knowledge. So you do not need to be afraid from technology like Kubernetes or something. You just need to jump into the water and read and watch things. And eventually things will set up and you will understand them.
Yes, I totally agree with Yakir. There are some good tutorials, especially in YouTube, that teach you how to build things from scratch, like a Kubernetes cluster. You can use EKS to create a Kubernetes cluster, but you can also build it component with after component and connect them together, which is a good way to learn things and to understand working with your hands.
Now, as part of our monthly content discovery series, we found this article about the ticking supply chain attack bomb of exposed Kubernetes secrets. We've talked about Kubernetes secrets before on other episodes in the podcast, particularly with Mac Chaffee. But the following questions are, we want to, you know, just to explore this topic further. Today, we're going to be focusing on the critical issue of exposed Kubernetes secrets and the potential supply chain attack threats they pose. Before diving into the findings, could you explain what Kubernetes secrets are and what they're usually used for?
Okay, so Kubernetes secrets, basically, it's the one of the basic components of the Kubernetes clusters. As you know, Kubernetes is not a standalone system. You need to pull container images from somewhere. So you need a secret or you need the token or something to get into your registry. And obviously, you might want to connect it with your organization. So maybe you need your SSO, maybe you need your SML token, maybe you need some network TLS certificate or something that you want to add to the Kubernetes. That's how you can connect it to the software development lifecycle and to the organization. And the Kubernetes need to store it somewhere, and it needs to know when and how to use it. So this is how the Kubernetes secrets come to life. And so it's basically a structured way to allow communication with the secured environments.
How many different kinds of Kubernetes secrets are there?
Okay, so officially there are 8 based on the Kubernetes I/O. And obviously it's kind of arbitrary and logical decision, these 8. You can have 5 or you can have 10, but it's basically a way that Kubernetes validates these secrets and sees that they are not broken and they are complete. So there is a reason to this division. But if you want to go a little bit or to review them, so let's say you have a node and you want to connect it to Kubernetes clusters. Obviously, you need a secret for the kubeADM to connect it because otherwise you will be able to connect any node in the world. So you need a secret for that. You have your service account, so you want them to do something. You want them to connect with the API server, so you need another secret for that. Obviously, if you want to do SSH, if you want to have TLS, so you have secrets for those as well. And I mentioned the registries, so you have 2 secrets for that. You have Docker config and Docker config JSON. And last but not least, which is the mother of all bomb, basically, you have the opaque, which is basically any secret you want. If you want to connect the Postgres or Grafana or whatever you want to connect, it's basically like anything that you want to add. So again, it's a little bit arbitrary because with the opaque, it's like endless possibilities.
And if there's one piece of advice when I think about secrets, it's from the cloud native wizard Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings, who says, you know, keep it secret, keep it safe. If we're thinking about safety, if secrets are meant to be secrets, how do they get leaked out into the wild? How does that happen?
I think it's a classical human error. And the problem with Kubernetes is not the secrets. We need secrets. They have their purpose in the server, in the program. But the problem is that if we look at the development lifecycle, when someone uploads it to public GitHub or GitLab, it's a problem because attacker could hunt these specific secrets of Kubernetes or other secrets. They can actually write specific regex that try to find any YAML file that contain Docker and then some regex to hunt for a base 64. And in this case, attacker could find them. But we need them. So later we will suggest some mitigation and how, if you want to upload your secrets for a platform like GitHub, you can do it, but you need to do it in a more secure way. And I think that one of the problems that we have seen in this research is this secret were base 64. And some people are confused between encryption and encoding. So they look at these strings and they think that this is okay because it's encryption. And even if attacker will find this, they will not able to decrypt this. But as I said before, it's encoding. So I can always decode this to the original plain text.
And are there any insights regarding, you know, what kind of projects, let's say, you know, the kind of companies that might be attacked, their size, their maturity level, what kind of projects are leaking those credentials and where those registries are located?
So basically everyone, yes. Because as Yakir said, and I completely agree, it's a human computer interaction problem. So there are all in all the companies, there are human. In all the companies, there are computers, so and they do interaction. So it's a global problem for all the companies. We've seen companies like Microsoft. We've seen companies from all sectors, from financial sector, which is often more secure than others, from insurance, from automotive, even the security industry or the which are supposed to be more secure, they also have these problems. And to, just to emphasize the problem, so think about it when you have contractors and you want to share with contractors registry secrets. Sometimes they use their own GitHub account and sometimes by mistake, they upload the secrets. Think about open source contributors or open source engineers. By mistake, they expose their entire Docker Hub or the entire registry. And when they do that and the token is privileged, then basically anyone can get into the Artifactory or into the registry and control it. And when they control it, it opens a supply chain to everyone, basically. So that's what we mean by human error. There was a really respectable with many stars open source engineer, and we found this Docker Hub registry credentials exactly in the way that
I think he was a security advocate too.
Yeah, and we showed it to him. He asked to call us to have a video call, and he told us, you know what, I'm ashamed, but it shouldn't have happened. It's a mistake, and obviously it could happen to anyone in any ranks, in any kind of industry, in any company. That's the human nature, unfortunately. But that's why we need good controls and good security posture in order to prevent it.
We actually published a follow-up log for the supply chain blog on Kubernetes when we disclosed companies like Azure and Red Hat that we found their secrets that could lead to major supply chain attacks. For example, in the case of Azure, we found a token for their Azure internal registry that they're using in some of their internal projects. And we have reported this finding for them, and they really quickly revoked this token. But if attacker had access or used this token before us, it could really lead to catastrophical result on Microsoft and Azure and their users.
And the thing is, I think a great takeaway with this is that, like you said, it's not just, you know, startups that say like, oh, security, we'll deal with that later, and then they're completely exposed. We're talking about large scale enterprises that have significant security teams. But as you mentioned, this, you know, this human error, you know, and some projects that are being actively maintained and others, you know, in terms of how often they're updated, there are a lot of things to keep in mind here. So when you find these credentials, what do you do? Do you pull enough images to trigger the Docker Hub limits, or what's your approach?
So obviously we ransomware the organizations and try to bring them to the knees. What we do is basically we have a very strict protocol we call it the Good Samaritan program. We really try to locate the organizations. I just actually came from a conference in Amsterdam, and I learned that the Dutch government imposed on all Dutch organizations a strict policy to add security.txt in their website. so that you will be able to get all the information, contact of
really
the organizations.
Important.
It's really important because many organizations don't have this address, and we should really adopt this Dutch, this Netherlands policy, because that's how you can contact with organizations. There are many organizations which you just can't contact, or smaller businesses.
Yes, we just gave up because we try to find employees of this company, of these companies, leave a message to the CEO, and we didn't get any response. So,
So it's important for companies to make themselves available and accessible, so that when these things come up, then they can be alerted. You know, someone who's also in the security industry told me a long time ago, there are two types of companies, the ones that know they've been hacked and the ones that don't. And as much as that might sound like, okay, marketing for security companies, I think there's a significant element of truth there. So companies need to make it easy for them to be informed that these things have happened. I think that's a good point. Now, in terms of how these leaks, I know you mentioned like thinking about Azure, you know, like it's not just Azure, it's all other users, you know, if we're thinking about that, or Red Hat or whoever it happens to be, you know, how these leaks could affect various organizations from small businesses to large enterprise. Are there any specific cases that you found to be surprising and that you might want to share?
I think there are some scenarios. For example, sometimes we found a private token for Docker app. And when we have logged in for Docker app, we found Docker images that we can sometimes search for secrets in this and other secrets in their private images. So we in this way, we expand our attack surface and get even more IPs, domains, secrets, and other and the source code that could serve us if we were attacker to expand the attack on organization. And sometimes if we had the write access for a Docker registry, we could replace or backdoor some of the existing image. And in this way, when someone will pull this image again, they will be backdoor, and then we will get initial access, and we could start something that's called lateral movement to search how we can expand in the network and find other valuable assets in the network.
I saw a very interesting tweet a few days ago. It says hackers don't hack anymore. They just use the keys. So I think it's a very good way to emphasize and support what Yakir is saying. These keys are actually the keys to the kingdom in some ways.
Yeah, because why to bother and try to hunt for vulnerability or complicated use complicated payload if you could use key that actually... Yeah, I will connect in the regular working hour, and I will take, I will use the regular API call just to pull another resources. And I will hope that I will be undetectable in my campaign as attacker.
Now, one of the things, you know, in playing and keeping that in mind, the mentality that organizations need to have of, you know, it's not just, I'm going to be constantly looking for weaknesses to exploit. It's like, no, I'm going to do things as if I was a regular employee, like you said, connecting during working hours, using the keys, et cetera. You've gone out and you've notified organizations about the things they need to be aware of, but other people that might get this information might not be so altruistic or friendly. What can organizations, what's the basic advice that you find yourself giving organizations about how they can prevent these scenarios from keys being available? What can organizations do to be safer?
First of all, I think some of them already do this, but to run secret scanning tool, but not just one, run some of them, because each one of them is different. Some of them base regex based, and some of them entropy based. So you will get actually totally different results from different tools. And as we suggest in our last blog, we would like organizations and some employee to scan their own private repos, because mistakes are happened, and people sometimes upload secrets to their own private or public repository in GitHub. So we need to check those repository too, because in this research, most of the secrets that we found were at personal employee repos and not in the company official repo.
Okay, so we can say that in a fair amount of these cases where secrets were leaked, it's because they weren't using scanners.
Oh, no, not necessarily. Not necessarily. So the direct cause of most of the secrets that we saw was like shadow IT in software development, in cloud native, which is a personal GitHub, personal registry. that weren't monitored by the company's tools. I think that most companies that we work with, at least, are using a threat model. And in their threat model, they just need to raise awareness and to add that to the policy and just to understand that this is an issue, the shadow IT, and also in cloud-native environments to add these environments, such as GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, and so on. So I think if they understand that and if they add that to the threat modeling and if they use the proper tools like Yakir said, that will cover these risks. Shadow IT is a huge problem. It's not a new problem. It's a huge problem. It's just came to the cloud as well, and they need to be aware of that.
I would like to add something. If you still have the needs to upload the secrets to your public GitHub repository, there are great tools that can help you encrypt this secret. For example, Sealed Secret or Mozilla OS SOP that actually can encrypt your secrets, and then you can upload them for your GitHub account. And when you want to apply them with kubectl, this secret manifest, for example, in Sealed Secret, there are a controller with the key that will decrypt these secrets. And this could help you, in the case of Kubernetes, upload only encrypted secret for GitHub if you want to share a manifest for some reasons.
One thing as well, too, just to go back to the specific cases that you may have seen, because I know in the beginning you mentioned, the risk of, crypto mining happen. This is something we've been hearing about for, I would say, 2-3 years. Is there a particular set of risks that blockchain companies need to be aware of, or it's an industry that might be a little bit more on the wild side? Any comments regarding that?
So the crypto mining aspect is, so these are two separate things. We did see a lot of, this was very peculiar because we did see a lot of blockchain companies that had this problem more than actually other industries. So we're a little bit puzzled about that. But this is one threat vector or attack vector. What you are saying is the impact. And we do see a lot of attacks, crypto mining attacks. And this is because it's a low-hanging fruit. You get access or remote code execution on a server, and you want to exploit it. So the immediate gain for financial attackers is to crypto mine because you get money from that. The next gain is to sell the secrets, is to go laterally and attack the cloud account, I don't know, maybe the S3 buckets, and to gain more secrets, to gain more access to other environments. But this is a more direct way to gain money.
For instance, you can automate this. The second way will require time and... In the first approach, you can actually automate this, find the open instance. Asaf is the expert in this area for sure.
Yeah, because we see a lot of attacks. There are many vectors. There are many ways to do that. So this is one thing that you mentioned. The second thing, and I started with it, is basically the blockchain companies. I guess you want to target these because then you get access to ledgers and to wallets. So instead of doing all the hard work, you just steal the wallet, which is like a credit card or another thing. And the crypto, the blockchain companies should be aware of that. And it's a warning sign from them, or it's a red flag for them to be aware that they shouldn't happen to them. They shouldn't leave their secrets exposed in the open in GitHub.
With things that, while we're thinking about, ways that companies can be equipped to deal with these problems. So in terms of preventing leaks, scanning, and mitigating misconfigurations in Kubernetes secrets, what are some pieces of advice that we could think about here when it comes to, data encryption or regarding privileges, expiration dates? What are things that you recommend regarding those points?
So one of the in our research we saw a lot of things, and Yakir also mentioned that. So you have in the Kubernetes threat model you have encryption of data in transit and data in rest, which is basically on the Kubernetes cluster itself, and also what Yakir mentioned, encrypting the secrets when they are outside of the Kubernetes cluster. So we've seen a lot of cases like this when you just can't do anything. When it comes to GCP, for instance, they have expiration date, also AWS, but the GCP is more limited or it's shorter. And then when you try to get access to the GCP registry, for instance, it is outdated and you can't do anything about it. So maybe having shorter expiration dates like the GCP model, using two-factor authentication, for instance, some of the Docker Hub secrets we found inquired the two-factor authentication. Now, there are ways to circumvent the two-factor authentication and to exploit that. So it's not completely bulletproof, but for attackers, which are script kiddies or just trying to get the low-hanging fruits, they will give up. And it's another way to protect your accounts. Yakir, do you have any further tips?
I think maybe to use Vault, AshiCorp Vault or KMS Vault of a different cloud provider, because they provide you a better observation on your secrets, and you, in this way you can verify them and rotate them. So I think it will be more a good approach than actually use the plain text or encoding secrets in your manifest. And as we said before, just to scan your code always, not just one time, to set up maybe action in your CI/CD for checking for leaked secrets. And even if you did not find secrets, rotate them after some months. You need to assume that someone already have them in such in some way. And in this way, you can prevent or minimize the risks. And of course, if we talk about defense in depth, you need to secure your cluster itself. So even if attacker would have access for a specific pod or specific node in your network, you need to minimize the risks and the attack surface by isolate them as much as possible. For example, separate Kubernetes cluster environment, the dev environment, the production environment, and the staging environment. So if one of them have fallen, it's will not affect the other.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that, you know, has come up over the years too is regarding misconfigurations is the idea, and I'm curious your thoughts about this, you know, that everyone is a security stakeholder in the organization and to some degree or another. When we're talking about development teams, you know, that they should, things that they should keep in mind in the development process, what are security recommendations that you might have for teams in that case?
I think that developers need better interaction with the researcher. I read that, I think on there is one researcher on something around 100 developers. So a lot of them do not have any awareness around different risks, or some maybe they do not read articles and they do not know the threat modeling. So we need to increase awareness. It really depends on the company, in my opinion. Some of them have a program or try to encourage employee to think on a secure way.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, you know, about it's all about the human factor, as we said, and the weakest link. So it, all you need is one engineer, one developer who makes a mistake. I was on a call a few months ago with 20 security engineers because we disclosed a problem to them. We told them, you know, your Kubernetes API server is exposed to the internet with anonymous user access and with privileges of admin on it. And it was a huge company that can impact millions, the lives of millions of people. And the senior VP, security VP, told us after the aftermath, he told us, you know, the problem was that one of the security engineers or one of the DevOps, he didn't thoroughly understand the AWS model. He exposed to the internet the API server and he added admin privileges. And he didn't really understand the consequences or the impact. And that's it. Just simple engineer doing that. So coming back to Yakir, you need education and training. You need to make baby steps if you are new to the organization, just to understand what you are doing. And you need some controls to understand that your Kubernetes cluster is not exposed, that you did not do this and that misconfiguration, because there are millions of misconfigurations and they are not as controlled by NIST or by governmental organizations. They're not documented as good.
In the article, you mentioned some specific points, you know, regarding GitHub, secrets management tool. I know you've referenced those before. Is there anything else that you would recommend?
No, I think Yakir spoke about it, like HashiCorp and using AWS KMS to encrypt your secrets. I think we mentioned all that throughout the conversation. I don't have anything new to say. But yeah, it's something that you really need to be aware of. I guess awareness and maybe
prevent secrets from uploading for GitHub from the beginning. Like there is a feature that called Preux that could alert you about secrets that have been committed to GitHub. And I know there are some companies that are actually actively scanning for a leak of other companies, and GitHub had a feature for a specific pattern of secrets to inform you if there is any, if they detected any leaked secrets in your repository, but user need to actively this feature. So we definitely recommend active any security feature that you got from their side. And I think that's it.
No, that's good. I mean, since you did mention HashiCorp, one sort of controversial question. If Kubernetes secrets are not so secret, should they be abandoned and something else be used, like HashiCorp Vault?
So HashiCorp is just one solution. But, you know, when you have solutions, they also bring with them some problems, like who controls the mega secret of HashiCorp and what happens if that gets breached? And also the complexities, because sometimes it brings new complexities and new problems, and to implement it, and it could affect the business, and it could affect the pace of production and working. So with each solution, we have a new set of security and operational problems. I guess secrets have their purpose. They have their purpose and we need them. HashiCorp is one good example of implementing. There are other good examples as well. I think that people should understand what is their security appetite comparing to their operational needs, and just use that. But I wouldn't say just completely abandon secrets. Just to be aware and to understand the implications, specifically to Kubernetes clusters.
I mentioned earlier in the conversation that we did have an episode about this with one of our guests named Mac, and he shared that Kubernetes secrets are mostly fine, and he arrived at this conclusion by building his own threat model and arguing that most other solutions don't offer a big jump in security. What is your advice regarding the perimeter of your cluster?
So I actually saw that episode and read the article, and I, first of all, kudos, I really loved it, and I'm really 100%, I was really 100% excited to see that engineers are really keen into security, which is a good step. Yakir said that there are not a lot of people, but I think that he's missing a few points. And it's not enough what he says. He's missing, for instance, supply chain attacks, which are not taken into consideration. And I think also the etcd, what happens post-exploitation. He just talked about the initial access, which is one point in the attack kill chain vector. But what happens if someone access to your your cluster and reads the etcd or basically read files from the node, which is another problem. I strongly advise to adopt a more mature Kubernetes threat model. You have a threat model by Microsoft, for instance. They have a very good Kubernetes threat model, which is updated. And there you can see not only the initial access, but lateral movement and also exfiltration, which is a more mature security way of thought, if that makes sense.
When we think about security, I mean, if Kubernetes, the cloud-native world is already, you know, rather niche, getting into the security space even more so. But for the two of you, how did your passion for security start? Did you, you know, as a 10-year-old say like, when I'm older, I want to be a cybersecurity expert. Maybe you saw a movie. What was it that got the path started for you, Yakir?
Actually, I was a developer in my past. I was a full stack developer and I have enjoyed this. But I remember that one time I did a capture the flag. If you know, this kind of event that you need to break something or to exploit specific vulnerability. And this is the first time that I was exposed for the world of cybersecurity and how huge it is. And then I never could look back. I find the new passion, and I think that this actually give me a real meaningful for my career, because the things that you do, you could really impact a lot of people in the industry. And then I really understand that I do not know nothing, and I need to expand my knowledge in different topics. And there are a lot of different concepts that are waiting for discovery. For example, if you look at the CNCF land space or the full stack technology, imagine that for each one of them, there might be, as a security researcher, a vulnerability, interesting vulnerability, or a attack vector that organization doesn't familiar with this yet. So there are a lot of things to learn, and there are a lot of things to discover in this field.
What about you, Asaf? How did your career in cybersecurity start?
So I got my first computer when I was 6 years old, and I basically, with no instruction, and I started to break things. And also, I don't know if I can say it, but I tried to circumvent around the games and to hack into games and to bypass things. And basically, this is how things started for me. I actually abandoned it for a few years. And then coming back when I was in high-tech industry, this passion lit back to me. And ever since, I'm trying to do things to define new boundaries of security, to better understand security posture, to better understand, to read everything. I share the passion with Yakir to read everything, to understand everything. If it's not documented,
I think that we must do it.
If it's not documented, then probably we can find it beyond the documentation. And if it's documented, it's just sitting in plain sight. You need to make the connections. And as you see, Yakir said, we all need to do that. We all need to read all the time to see tutorials, to better understand things.
Yakir, you wanted to speak about the importance of reading.
Reading of cyber materials or security materials?
Poetry, romantic novels.
So when I read some cookbooks, so I think as a security researcher, you must first need to think as DevOps or the developer of the technology in order to really understand the basics and things what they do when they use this technology. And after this, you will understand a new attack vector or a new risk. I think that this the things that attackers do as well when they try to hunt vulnerability. For example, when there is a release note of new version of Kubernetes or other technology, they try to find if there is any fix of vulnerability that maybe the company haven't disclosed responsibly and maybe exploit previous version of this vulnerability. I think that we all must do it and stay up to date. We do not have other choice. Maybe to watch a video after a conference. I think that we can see it at KubeCon. In the last KubeCon, there were a lot of security talks about Kubernetes, and it's increasing over here, the awareness.
Yeah, we also, you know, Cloud Native Security Con, like that's grown a lot as well too, you know, apart from KubeCon. And that's why I said previously, you know, that it seems that everyone nowadays in one way or another is a security stakeholder, you know, that it's something that can't just be isolate inside a team. I really like the point that you mentioned too, that, you know, that find your local security researcher, you know, like don't be ashamed to ask for help or say like, hey, I don't know what are some of the best practices. And as you mentioned too, you know, GitHub, for example, has developed features that some people may not be aware of, that are a lot of things that are accessible. You know, that's not just well, I'm going to wait for this to be a problem and then someone's going to clean it up. It's like, no, you can be part of the solution. And also understanding that as security professionals, that you said, Yakir, you know, being able to have make an impact for other people. Yakir, though, before you started at Aqua, you were in a red team, and before yes. switching to a blue team. This sounds a little bit like the Matrix. What is it? What is a red team? What is a blue team?
Okay. So I think that Asaf will add more information about the blue sides, even though that you have some red so attributes. But red teamer is actually a security role within organization that attempt to simulate advisory behavior in the network and actually assess the organization response to cybersecurity incident. As part of this role, we sometimes develop a fake malware or conduct a campaign to actually check the security of the company network and to actually approve for the company how long it took them to detect a suspicious activity and what attacker was able to do in this time. And actually, I was never switched sides. I am in the red side currently. I try to hunt for vulnerability. And when we are saying red side, we are meaning for more offensive research. We are trying to find vulnerabilities, attack vector, risks, and less perform something that's called reverse engineering or to find the attackers.
Yeah, I think red and blue comes from the army, from war games. And the reds are the attackers and the blue are the defenders. So the defenders, they need to search their own perimeter to understand if there is a breach, what attacked us, to collect the IOCs or indications of compromise, indications of attacks, to understand if there is an active attack or there was an attack in the past, and also to understand if the security borders, the controls, the perimeter is not breached, to defend it, to understand how to defend it. So I guess it's the attackers and defenders. And Yakir mentioned something in between. There is another third option, which is purple, which is both attacker and defender. Just to have your mindset to think about how to defend things and how to attack. I think that we are both more to the purple side, or today Yakir is more to the purple side, because even though he has more offensive thinking, he always has one more thought on how to defend, how to fix, how to add things to the current products or whatever we have to mitigate or to defend others.
So from the mentality perspective, that honestly sounds a little bit tiring, that you're attacking yourself and defending yourself at the same time. But if you're able to do it, I respect you. Now, for the two of you, what's next? You give a lot of talks. You're very active in the community. What's next? What can we expect from you in the coming 6 months to a year?
Actually, we are currently doing a huge research study around a lot of research that are undetectable on GitHub and GitLab, and that no scanning tools could find nowadays. So I think it will perform some noise when it will be released in the Cloud Native Security Call. And currently, we are trying to look at different cloud vulnerabilities. We'll speak at Black Hat about different vulnerability that we found on AWS that actually allow us breach any AWS account in the world.
Assume total control over AWS accounts.
And we have reported this finding for AWS, which fixed it, and we will release this in Black Hat.
Yeah, we actually, over the past couple of years, we took Kubernetes to the next level. So we were trying to create Kubernetes honeypots to many areas like the kubelet, like etcd. So we are going to publish some reports about that. And in order to create a honeypot on the infrastructure of Kubernetes, we also trying to find new things that others didn't find. So we are also looking into that. So I guess more on the same on Kubernetes.
Now that we talked about this earlier, we want to make, you know, security more accessible to developers, more accessible to the stakeholders that may not be aware of these concerns. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Okay, so we have a blog. So if they don't want to actively get in touch with us, they can always read our blogs. We have many blogs on Kubernetes and cloud native and other areas, but they can always reach out to me via LinkedIn or Twitter.
Same for me. We would love
to talk. You were easy to find. Yeah, weren't very secret. Yeah, you were easy to find. You're busy, but not very easy to find. Well, thank you very much for joining us today on KubeFM. Really enjoyed hearing from you about the work that you're doing. And like I said, I think that, you know, there just needs to be the normalization of security as an everyday living, breathing aspect of every organization, regardless of being, you know, enterprise, startup, it doesn't matter. It's something that can't be overlooked. And it doesn't have to be a culture of paranoia. It has to be a culture of proactivity and asking questions, finding the best resources and speaking to experts like the two of you. So thank you very much for your time today and look forward to seeing you somewhere in the Kubernetes universe.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.